Hi everyone, you're listening to the Accents podcast on WUKY. This episode has been brought to you by Kentucky Humanities and the Kentucky Book Festival. I am your host, Katerina Stoykova, and my guest today is poet David Kasdan. Hi, David.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited to talk to you, and you have a fabulous news. You just have had a book accepted.
Yes, at a little tiny publisher out on the West Coast, off Seattle. I'm not sure when it's going to be out yet, maybe fall. So I am excited about that because it's been about 11 years since I've had a book.
From what I read about it, it's something like new and selected, right?
Well, It's mostly new and selected. There's about five or six poems that I wanted to rewrite from my last book that I put in there that I feel really went with everything else that was new. So I was really adamant about putting those in. So it's a mostly new and selected.
Okay. All right. And what are some of the topics and the themes in that book, and what's the title?
The title, believe it or not, is Kentucky Pathways. The editor liked that quite a bit. It's the themes that are pretty broad, but it's really about me growing up. And I actually grew up first 8 years of my life in Oregon. So there's a few poems that really have to do with the West Coast and growing up and my mother. So very, very distant childhood memory poems. There's elegies to my little brother, who's gone, and my parents, as we moved here to Kentucky when I was just about 8 or 9 years old. So there's elegies and poems about growing up, coming of age a little bit, a number of poems about Kentucky, about place, and also about being in college. So it really spans a lot of my life. It doesn't really concentrate on any one particular time frame. You even have a poem about Danville, and I just moved there 2 years ago. So that's one of my favorite ones in there.
Well, why don't we start with hearing that poem?
Okay. This is a true poem as opposed to like one you just make up. So maybe 6 months after I went there, we bought a new house, a tiny little new house, and a little row of them a couple of years ago. I guess the only thing that people, maybe now that everything's expensive, sod has become very expensive. So we got a decent amount of land, like a third of an acre, but they put netting down. So the netting is supposed to hold seedlings. And my neighbor came over a few months and knocked on the door, and that's what this is about. And it's called Boyle County Snake. In Danville's quiescent morning, my neighbor knocked. I'm Ebony from next door. I found a snake, and if my husband ever knows, he'll sell our place and move away. I wanted to help, so I took my snow shovel into summer, and Ebony and I went behind the house. Wild new grass, tough contractor's mesh on the fledgling lawn, where I found a 5-foot snake beneath the nets. Now I knew in Boyle County, snake eyes slit like vertical blinds meant venom, days of pain, that round eyes reflect only our own fear and the faintest rinds of sky. So I made 5 shovel stabs just to break the mesh and lift the net away. I cradled the serpent on the shovel, its mouth opening as if to speak, body coiling in memory's thickets. I carried it to a field of copper grasses that seemed to stretch forever behind our homes. I hoped it would survive, thin as a thread of moonlight in the rippling fields. Walking home, my morning returned with that stillborn silence only small towns have. Late afternoon clouds plumed in, unfolding like a spell, fattening rings of trees washing everything, loose grass, slivered scales, and all the poison we imagined, not the shame we felt, putting plastic on the lawns, trapping whatever clings beside us on the ground.
That is so beautiful.
Thank you. I realize one of my themes is eco poetry, too.
Yeah. And you write a lot about animals.
Oh, yes. A number of poems about animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your previous book was about animals.
It was. And I'm including one of those poems, or a handful of my animal poems from the previous book in this one, and I paired them up with new animal poems. Mm-hmm. Although there's not really that many, but it's more than I always think there are. I always wind up writing about, like, my dog or cat or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I think animals are special, and we owe them something.
Well, please read us another poem from this upcoming book.
The reason I wanted to pick, like, a pair is because one's from my old book, and the other one's from the new one, and they're written maybe 12 years apart, and one's about a dog, and one's about a cat. The first one is from the old book and the new book, both, called Our Dog. Looking through the living room window at every squirrel darting in sunbent limbs, our dog appears as much as a dog can to hold his breath, as if he can't believe what he's seeing. Perhaps he thinks of early morning bird chatter, branches rubbing, footsteps of apples falling. When the consonants of autumn intrude in his sleep, he'll twitch his paws like he's running, releasing a muted cry from his side of the bed. He watches squirrels trace figure eights beneath burning locks of goldenrod, squirrels spinning in circles through a choir of sunflowers, and though he's shown restraint so far, when I crack the door he bolts, bounding up and howling. For a moment, he's no longer ours, but belongs to the quilt of yellow and russet leaves thrown across the shoulders of the hills in Indian summer, weaving in thatched light toward the creatures of his dreams. So that was about our dog, and he used to dream, you know, move his paws like he's really involved in something of dog importance. And he'd also look the animals outside, and I always imagine he was chasing something.
Is nowadays a luxury to be able to observe nature, to look away from a screen of any form? What do you think?
It is a luxury and a state of mind. I spend a lot of time in front of the screen. I probably don't spend enough time in nature, even though we have a really nice view in our backyard because they didn't develop it. But I think about nature quite a bit and try and spend as much time as I can out there. One of the reasons I started writing poetry when I was 16 was listening to a reading by the poet Gary Snyder, which maybe people aren't familiar with him because he's from the 60s, 70s. He's a beat poet, but he was an amazing nature poet from the West Coast. And you'd lump him in with Allen Ginsberg and all that, but he was unlike that in the way he wrote. He wrote about Zen Buddhism and nature in a very pure way. And I just, when I was really young, I was influenced by him. He was also a friend of my mother's in high school in the 40s. Mm. So,
how did he influence you? Did he mentor you? Did you feel encouraged because he took you seriously?
It was something about his presence. He came to dinner at our house because of his friendship with my mom in the 40s at Lincoln High School in Portland, Oregon. And I showed him a poem I wrote when I was 16. So I was real lucky just to have him there. And then later I saw him read at the university, and I was just amazed. I was amazed. Hadn't never seen anything like that before. I read a number of his books, maybe the first books I read, Turtle Island, won the Pulitzer Prize, I don't know when, 1976 or something like that, or 74.
I want to hear one more poem from this book, and then I would like to shift the conversation to other questions that I have for
okay.
you.
Okay, one more poem. I guess I'll read the cat poem. It's pretty sad, but that's all right. And they all can't be happy. It's called Cat's Cradle. We found her in a shelter infected with herpes felis. She never breathed easy, sneezing on walls, leaving tears like blood-stained petals on the pillow. Yet she sleeps by my head with crusty eyes that still gleam emerald, even in daylight, and pupils thin as splintered midnight sky. Because she follows us room to room, house to house, we name her Shadow. Whenever we lie down, Shadow crawls between us. Sometimes I drift away to her wheezing breath, my hand on her coat, its deepening softness without beginning or end. And I'll think of my brother, OD'd at 35, of us as kids playing in the yard, sun dipping in the hollies. Then the clarity of burial day in an old-growth cemetery, leaves and seed pods at our feet. And I feel the bed turn in orbit with the clockwork planets and flywheel moon, keeping time as they did at our old house, where below shedding oaks and peeling gutters we left our footsteps. Sometimes I forget to clean Shadow's face and eyes with saline. Then she pulls back, stretching in a feline curve, dark fur spilling on the sheets from the bed's faint edge to the slip of dawn.
These are lovely. Much success to you with
Thank
this
you.
New book. You are one of those poets who take long, and I mean long writing breaks, in order
yes.
to do other things.
Yes.
And then here you are, writing poems, have Gary Snyder mentoring you. And
sort
then
of mentoring, yes. Well, I don't know, a lot of things happen in my life that distract me. I wanted to be an engineer for a while, and that distracted me. And I just have gotten distracted and run off the poetry path or wandered off for maybe a decade or so. And then I'll all of a sudden find it again and take it back up again. I wish that wasn't the case, but, you know, that's just the way my life has unfolded. And I'm lucky that I got back on the poetry path again just about 4 years ago. I can't actually say why these things happen, although I think I started again. I think it had to do when I heard that Louise Gluck had won the Nobel Prize, because I always loved her poetry. And that got in my head, and I go, God, she's great. And it just started again. I took a drive also down Route 27 toward Danville. At the time I was living in Lexington, and just everything sort of clicked again, and I just went home and wrote a poem, and I haven't stopped since. That was like 4 or 5 years ago. So yeah, I've gone through these runs. We're all right, like 5 to 8 years, and stop.
One thing that is tricky for me, and I've noticed, if you exit the literary community for a while and then re-entering it could be tricky.
It's been very tough, and I regret not being more involved with the literary community, which is so good here in this state and city. I have been involved at times. I edited a magazine for 5 years, but it is. You do lose touch with people, and it's not good. And I don't recommend anybody follow the path I've done, which is a zigzag, non-linear path.
You know, I think it was Carl Jung who said, if the path before you is clear, that means you're following somebody else's. So that has been your...
I didn't know he said that. He said so much.
Well, I like that because, that's great. You know, yeah. It gives me, that quote gives me hope. And your path has been your own. And I once had a long break, like 11 years.
Yeah, that's a good long time.
And then, I mean...
You can't reform yourself when that happens.
What do you mean?
I reform your life and psyche and your orientation toward life and your work and everything.
Well, yes. I also changed languages and countries and
That's quite a reform right
yeah.
there.
Yeah. To me, that writing break had a price because I didn't feel like myself.
Yes.
So right now I'm terrified and I watch it.
Yeah. I'm not going to leave the path again. I'm too old to fool around. So that's not going to happen again. I write every day. I'm living in Danville and don't have much else to do now. So it's just going to happen. I did want to mention two other people that are passed away that helped me and mentored me to some degree. There's been James Baker Hall and Jane Gentry Vance. I don't know if anybody remembers them or not, but they helped me.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think many of our listeners, especially the listeners in Kentucky, would know and love both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I was an engineering student at UK, I was just, 20, 19. I mean, I'd go to engineering class and I'd stop by Jane Vance's office and show her a poem. So I just think that's kind of a unique story. And she's been very good to me and yeah. very helpful.
Really a gentle woman.
Yes.
Yeah.
And very much of a Kentucky writer, too.
I spoke with her on Accents a long time ago, when Accents was on WRFL, and she was the Kentucky Poet Laureate at the time.
Right.
And I was reading her bio for the listeners. Kentucky was every third word
yeah.
in the bio. So she has given so much.
Yes, she did. Yeah. She's a really pure Kentucky poet. One of the ones that obviously there's been many, but that I've known. And she did mentor me, as did James Baker Hall, both.
Tell the listeners of Accents about your official meeting with James Baker Hall.
Oh, that was really funny because his mouth probably dropped open and really was on the floor. Because what he and his wife, who's a great writer too, I had a computer store. And at that time, I wasn't really writing poetry, but I read some, and I had seen his book, and I had it. And he walked in the store with great fear. This was in maybe 1996 or 7, when buying a computer was a scary thing to do because they didn't really work very well, but you had to have one, and he never had one before. And I recognized him from his book, and I said, I have your book. I love your book of poetry. And he just couldn't believe that somebody in a computer store read his book or even knew who he was. He was just shocked. His eyes, he couldn't hide his emotions very well, which is, I like that in people. And that was when he said, if I ever wanted to, I could completely sit on one of his entire poetry classes.
Wow.
And I took him up about a year later, and that's when I really started writing.
Did Did you sign up officially for the class, or did you just sit in the...
No, I didn't sign officially, though. He just let me go in.
Well, that's cool.
But I had been a student there before, so I had my degrees from UK, but no, he just let me come in. But I went every day and did everything.
Yeah.
Didn't get a grade because I wasn't enrolled.
Tell us about playing chess.
It's one of those games that's really more than a game. And there's a lot to study, and you can just throw yourself into that and get lost for 5 years if you want to. There's something beautiful about chess. There's an inner beauty. It's not the same as poetry. It's different. It's also a sport. So it's competitive. But I really enjoyed it. And it's very hard to get better if you're not born a prodigy. There's some people who are chess prodigies, and they're the best chess players that are prodigies. You know, when they're 9 years old, they'll all of a sudden just start playing, and they'll start beating people just after looking at the board. It's something in the brain. And then by the time they're 15, they're a grandmaster, and those people are amazing. But eventually, it became what I thought was kind of a waste of time. Most people would consider it a waste of time, but people don't realize that. I think there's more books written about chess than all other games combined. But now, of course, computers play, so it's kind of corrupted the game somewhat.
Have you written poems about playing chess?
You know, I haven't. I probably ought to, but I haven't. They haven't been two diverging paths, so they have never crossed, but that's a good idea, actually.
I mean, here it is, a book of 64 poems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One for each square, or one for each figure, and there is the persona poem of the horse, and there is the persona poem from the queen, and then the sections about beginning, middle, and end, or... There is the poem about winning, and there's the poem about...
That's not a bad idea.
About knowing that you're going to lose, and then, I don't know.
That's not a bad idea. That's a good idea. But the only problem with it, there's not that many chess players that read poetry and vice versa. But there might be more than I think.
What do you think?
Poets.
I don't think that chess players who don't like poetry will not read it.
That's true.
Chess players who like poetry will read it, and also poetry lovers who don't play chess will also read it. So people who read poetry will read to try to see, you know, something novel.
It wouldn't be the first time that chess was used in literature.
Queen's Gambit, you know. But
Queen's Gambit, yeah. That was a great movie.
Yeah.
You know, I played in some of those little tournaments which they simulated when I was young, like 15 or something. I don't know, I was thinking Lewis Carroll. It's not been done much, but it has been done.
I haven't seen it done in poetry.
Not in poetry, no.
Right. You were born in Vienna, Austria.
Yes. My parents obviously were there. Obviously my mother was there. That goes without saying. But I only lived, I was raised there for maybe the first year of my life. And then they moved back to the U.S. And so technically, I think I had dual citizenship, but no one ever asked me to decide, and so I guess it defaulted to be a U.S. citizen when I was 18. So yeah, I was born overseas in Vienna, and the last time I saw my birth certificate was one of those, U.S. citizen born abroad to U.S. parents.
Mm-hmm.
It's a special one. It's signed by Cyrus Vance, maybe? Secretary of State way back in 1958.
Can I be as curious as to ask what were your parents doing in Austria?
Well, they were having a lot of fun. I mean, they were having a lot of fun in Europe. It was a different time then, and they had a lot of slides of Vienna and Florence that I remember seeing. And I think it was kind of an extended honeymoon. I think things were cheaper back then. They just, I'm not exactly sure why, but they were. My dad was a professor at UK, and he was what they used to call library science, and his specialty was German-American literature. So it may have had something to do with that, but I think they were just there to cruise around.
To enjoy life.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you think of the most important lesson from James Baker Hall?
He told me that the problem was that most of the people he got were English majors that were very good with words but were very analytical. And all he cared about is what they were writing about, mm-hmm. not how, which, of course, it's both. But he told me one time he even snuck a box of wine in there just to loosen everybody up. So he was there to loosen people up and get them to become feeling people rather than analytical people, analytical writers. Because he had a lot of students that did a lot of expository writing and what you'd call analysis, but he would try and get them to feel like an actor or actress. And that's the whole class was about that. What are you writing about? Is it what you really feel? You know, there's a lot you have of preparatory work you have to do before you find what it is you want to write about.
And what is the most important thing that Jane Gentry taught you?
It's her voice. I don't know, it just sort of absorbed into me when she read, and the voice in her poems. I somehow think I sound like her from what I remember. I probably don't, but in my mind, when I read a poem, I think I sound a little like Jane Gentry.
Well, what does sound similar is the tenderness and the peacefulness and the kindness in the voice. But she did have a southern accent.
Yeah, that's true.
She did have a pretty strong southern accent.
I write soft poetry, which is not, it's not really, I don't want to say it's not fashionable, but it's not going to get everybody all excited about something. It's just the way I am. I've always done that. I try and make it as sharp as possible, but it's soft.
I did ask her that question, and I ask, listeners of Accents know that I've been asking this question for years. What is the most important thing you teach your students? If there is one thing you want them to remember from your workshop or class, what is it? And I still remember Jane's answer, which was people need stories. After basically the need for shelter and food,
yes,
is the need for stories.
Yes.
And poems are stories.
They are stories. Stories are very important.
I would love to hear another poem.
This one's called A Kentucky Goodbye. By the time I saw you in skirts of jasmine and sweaters of dandelions, it was almost too late. We were in college, rounding a hill to summer, taking a gentle slope down. Then on a day by a pond, we watched dragonflies hover, measuring distances, shore to horizon, reed to water lily, sunlit rock to wisp of brown hair. Something was being calculated, beginning to end. We talked, tossed rocks, braved mosquitoes fine as newsprint on the way to the car. After driving to your apartment, we watched Jason Robards in 1,000 Clowns and took angel dust, which made the light shimmer. We could smell fruit off night-blooming trees in the lavender scarf of the wind. You told me you were leaving as the angel dust settled like dusk in the pond behind us, filling our footsteps, sifting down strip-mined hills on grass soft as cat's fur, clinging with this restless glow we still feel in the hollows and valleys in the lines of our hands.
That is so beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was hard to write. It sounds easy.
Thank you so much, David. I really appreciate you coming on Accent.
All right. Okay. Nice to see you again, too.